Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. I am, of course, Mr. Warren Hayes, and you know, it's early morning here in North America. It is late afternoon other places, perhaps even the evening. Look, what I'm trying to get at is that where I am right now, it's pretty early to be here live streaming on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, but there's a very good reason for that, and that's because we just finished watching New Japan Pro Wrestling's Power Struggle 2020 event. It just happened. It just concluded, and we are going to be talking about it this morning, today, this afternoon, because it is afternoon for my boy Mags, who's joining me from all the way over in Britain, you know, Boris Johnson country. Good to see you. Good to see you, Mags. How you doing today, friend?
I am doing really, really well. Whenever I get a chance to come on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show, it's a fun time. More fun than a worldwide pandemic. Certainly more fun than a national lockdown, and infinitely more fun than building a shed.
Which is something that I'm keeping you from doing right now. You are supposed to be building a shed right now.
I am.
I'm keeping you away from manual labor. That sounds exactly like something I'd do. Try to weasel my way out of sweating, using my hands to build something, you know, physical. It's very on brand for me. I'm glad I'm able to extend that to you.
Unfortunately, it's just delaying the inevitable. I will eventually have to go and help build the shed.
Okay, well, hey, I mean, we can do a 6-hour podcast if you need, and you're like, oh, he just wouldn't stop talking.
Yeah, get me all the way to Full Gear tonight, and we'll be happy.
Oh, but yeah, because we do have Full Gear later on. It's a busy Saturday as far as pro wrestling goes. But hey, we're not here to talk about the Elite and all that. We're here to talk about New Japan Wrestling, and look at this. We do have people who are here live in the chat. Some people that I know who are in North America, and others, well, you know, some people, others who think they're in North America, but I do know very well they're in Britain. Tim Traver is here. Good to see you, Tim. Benoit Parise is here too, but he's sleepy. He's probably not going to make it, but good to see you nonetheless, Ben. Anakin is here as well. Good to see you. We've got the Elite here as well. It's good to see everyone. Nice times, and we are going to talk about everything that happened in this show here. If you're watching live right now on YouTube.com, hey, consider giving the video a thumbs up. That kind of stuff really helps out. And even if you're listening on demand a little later, maybe, you know, you catch the show a little later, then you tune in here. Or maybe you're listening here to wonder, should I watch this show in the first place? Well, hey, thank you. And still consider giving the video a thumbs up. And if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast application, by the way, thank you very much for that sweet, sweet audio listen. A review, a like, a subscription, whatever it is you do on your platform to show some love there. That kind of stuff helps out big time. But not as big time as a professional wrestling event held in Osaka, Power Struggle 2020. Not as big time as Mags as well. Mags, just to make sure that we understand exactly who you are, why don't you give us a minute just in case there's people out there who don't know who you are, which I don't understand why they wouldn't. Let us know what it's all about, man.
Okay, so I got dragged kicking and screaming into this content creation game by a few of my friends, and one including your good self. I used to do a podcast called Why We Watch, where I would talk to wrestling fans and content creators about why they love watching wrestling, but I killed that show off, and now I only have about 7 other shows.
That's all.
That's all. Yeah, I do a show about UFC called 5 Rounds. I do a wrestling show called Badlands, where we talk about the Mount Rushmores of wrestling. I do a football or soccer for you Americans show called Radio Techers, and then I am also involved in a show called Talk at the Table, where we just get together every fortnight and just have a grumble about wrestling and the world's events. So yeah, I've got my My fingers in many, many, many pies.
There you go. Always busy, always talking about something. You follow Mags on Twitter, and then you make sure that you don't miss a thing. Because our Mags, he's a busy boy. He's a busy boy. Want to say hello to Corey Richmond, who just joined us in the chat. Good to see you. And our boy Anakin has dropped a couple of super chats already. Thank you very much, Anakin. I appreciate it. First, where he says, Warren is still sus, as in suspicious, right?
He's the imposter.
Exactly. But we have been running Among Us games on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show Discord. And for some reason, in the past few games, I have been consistently the imposter. Like, I think out of the last 8 games we played, I think I was 6 times the imposter. It's becoming a meme. And Anakin says Michigan is in North America, Warren. I'm glad you're getting better with your North American geography, Anakin. Anakin is British, by the way. I don't know if you knew this, Max. And you know, he keeps talking about Michigan. I think he likes American geography quite a bit. So let's get to it. Let's just get started with the card. What did you think of the show overall, to begin with?
It was very much a card of two halves. The first half was interesting and fun, and then we had a bit of a piss break in the middle, and then we got back to interesting and fun again, and then we got the end, which was the end.
I personally, going into this card here, I wasn't excited for it. You know what I mean? I looked at the lineup and I was like, okay, this is very, I mean, there was a couple of things where I was interested. I mean, Suzuki and Takagi, what are you going to do? You know, but I was like, average. I'm not really excited, but sort of exceeded my expectations in a couple of instances here. I had a fun time watching this show. Not going to lie. Is it the greatest show New Japan has ever put on? No. But let's talk about it. Let's go right ahead.
Let's do it.
Our provisional King of Pro Wrestling for the year 2020 held on to his prestigious trophy. The king, the greatest wrestler in the world right now, Toru Yano, defeated Zack Sabre Jr. The stipulation was no corner pads. I thought, straight off the bat, I'm going to draw, I just want to get your thought. I thought that stip was lame. I thought it was lame. And it confused me as to how it was implemented as well. And the match, what do you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious New Japan are trying to do something different in terms of just standard matches with this trophy. Yeah, it was silly, but a Yano match is the absolute best when it is silly, when he makes it a daft wrestling match.
Sure, maybe my point isn't clear. I thought that the stipulation, right? Like, I understand the gimmick of the King of Pro Wrestling stuff, but I thought the stipulation of taking the pads off, why in a Yano match would you already take them off when Yano is going to take them off to just crash people into the turn? But like, was it to avoid Yano using the pads during the, like the stipulation confused me and I thought it was kind of lame. That's, I don't know if I'm being clearer as to why I didn't like it.
I don't think anything about this stipulation is clear.
Okay, good. All right.
The only part of it that I slightly understood was that Zach was, oh, is that your Alexa going mad?
Yeah, for some reason.
She doesn't understand either. The only thing that I kind of knew about it was that Zach was trying to put the pads back on in a match to build up. So that's where they got this stipulation from. It made absolutely no sense. It was ridiculous.
Especially when Yano started to tape one back. I'm like, this is a reverse Yano match because Yano takes them off. Why are you putting them back on? I didn't. it can, like, honestly, it just confused me. I didn't, yeah. And I'm easily confused. I'm a middle-aged man. So, you know, it's like, I get befuddled by things. What I'm kidding, of course, but you know, it was your standard goofy Yano match. At the same time, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. got some stuff in. There were some fun near fall attempts that leaded into a knee bar by Jr. That Yano tried to get out of. And of course, well, then we came to the big ending where there was a heel lock submission that Zack Sabre Jr. had applied to Yano through the barricade. And as Yano is suffering the agony of it, he's tying Zack Sabre Jr.'s bootlaces together.
Yeah.
So that when the referee goes to the ring and starts counting down the 20 and Jr. releases the hold so that he can get back into the ring, he can't because he's tied up within the barricade. So Yano hoofs it, gets into the ring, wins the match. There you go. Any last words on this one?
I think the segment just before they went outside and did the fence thing where they were trading heel hooks, I thought that was a very clever segment, and it shows that Yano is not just a comedy wrestler. He does have some he does have some wrestling chops. I loved the fact that I think it was Rocky Romero and Chris Charlton having a bit of back and forth saying that they misgendered a corner pad. That was a fun line in 2020. And to be fair, I think Yano could well be a trailblazer because we're getting all this WWE stars can't have Twitch accounts. If they did the QR code that thing like Yano, they could have sneaky little Twitch accounts that WWE have no clue about.
But then that would, you know, that would mean coming out with things, sneaking QR codes onto WWE television. Yeah. I mean, I'd pop for whoever would manage to do that, right? But yeah, look, that started off the match. It was fine as a curtain jerker. You know, it was all right.
Yeah.
Shingo Takagi defeated Minoru Suzuki to once again regain the Never Open Weight Championship. I thought when Shingo dropped the title before going into the G1 at Summer Struggle, actually, I thought that this was the sign that they're divesting Shingo of the title, so he's going to have like this massive run in the G1, that he was going to win the block, maybe not win the G1, but you know, win the block, which clearly didn't happen. And now they're like, okay, well, let's give him back the title. Sure.
Yeah. I thought I was along the same side as you. I thought this was the start of a Shingo push. Maybe not so much to the world title, but at least to intercontinental level. Yep. But then to drag him back into the never open weight division. I mean, I'm happy about it. He gets to absolutely beat the living piss out of guys. But yeah, it just seems this stalling on this pushing of Shingo over the top, because yeah, he's one of the best wrestlers that they've got, and he needs. I mean, he's not a young guy anymore. He needs to be quickly pushed up that card, and otherwise he's going to just stay in this kind of like mid-card like doldrum almost.
Yeah, I agree. This is the third time that these guys met this year. Of course, mm-hmm. You know, they start really strong on each other and they tumble to the floor after Suzuki did a rope tied arm triangle, and he works on Shingo's lower back for a good portion of the match, and this would have an effect on Shingo. Mm-hmm. Back in the ring, they strong style on each other. There's a Death Valley driver by Shingo and a great sequence of big strikes by both guys. Shingo hits a sliding D as well. Suzuki continues to work the lower back. He hits a running drop kick on Shingo, and man, that's the thing, right? I know at some point it's tiresome to talk about how great Suzuki is in the ring despite being over 50, you know? But like, it's a tiresome subject. But when you see the guy hitting a running drop kick like effortlessly on Shingo, who's running the ropes at the same time, you know, like you can't help but think it comes to you. You're like, this guy's over 50 and look at what he's doing. Right.
Yeah. It's mental what he can do at that age. I mean, I'm a lot younger than him and there's no way I could attempt a running drop kick. Yeah. And the corner work that they were doing in the match where they were trading, those elbows and then trading headbutts. Jesus Christ. CTE guys, CTE. I had to take an Advil after that. but yeah, I mean, you can sometimes say that, when you see wrestlers facing each other time and time again, you can get bored and it can get very kind of just boring. I could watch these two fight every single day without fail and not get bored. They just absolutely wail on each other and it's always a brutal but fun match to watch. But yeah, it was just, it's scary how good these two guys are.
Yeah, I agree. Shingo won when he started just throwing these insane lariats, like one after the other, and Suzuki just couldn't take it anymore. Shingo moves into the Last of the Dragon and wins the championship back. Here's the thing, you know, there's instances where Suzuki loses and he smiles, right? And he's on the floor, he lost the match, but he's got this big grin on his face. Not here. And I think this is the big story between him and Shingo, is that Shingo beats the piss out of him to the point where, where Suzuki has to be helped out of the ring, which is, again, something that doesn't happen. So, you know, the conclusion to this match and the post-match continues to establish Shingo as a beast, because just in the G1, he fought Ibushi in a fantastic match, but he had a grin on his face the whole time that he was getting the shit beat out of him. Not when he fights Shingo. When he fights Shingo, man, he gets hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like the flip side of the Minoru Suzuki and Tanahashi feud from a couple of years ago, where he broke Tanahashi. This is like Shingo has to break Suzuki. And yeah, the no smile at the end kind of shows that Shingo achieved it in this match.
So Shingo gets the title back, the never title back. And, you know, since the Intercontinental and IWGP heavyweight titles have been like carried by one person, the Neverweight title has really become like the truly secondary title. And especially like Shingo has done a fantastic job bringing that title up, elevating it. His feud with Show was fantastic. His matches with Suzuki were as well. I think in that trilogy that they have, I think this was my least favorite of the three, but that's like saying, that's like when you start saying, oh, well, I prefer this version of champagne, this champagne versus this one here kind of thing. You know, it's like being nitpicky here. I think this has been good for the Never title. It's become, I think it was always considered a bit of a workhorse title, but more so now, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it wasn't that long ago we were in the times of Ishii and Goto trading the title, and as good as it was, it always felt like that was a level that it was going to get to where...
Yeah, this, a ceiling, this, right?
But involving Shingo and then Suzuki, it's become the second belt.
Yeah.
Because obviously the main two are tied up. The US title is AWOL. So yeah, this is essentially the US title for New Japan.
Kazuchika Okada defeated the Great Okan in a match that I did not care for. My God, Mags. What the... Oh. Okay, first of all, let's get this straight. It's the Dominator Great Okan, right? Because Great Okan just itself wasn't convoluted enough as a name. You had to add like Dominator anyway. This is actually his first singles match in New Japan of the young lion that we formerly knew as Tomoyuki Oka since February 2019. So he was indeed an excursion in Rev Pro, which I think he has an undefeated record in Rev Pro. Like
he's, I think he's lost two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for the correction then. Interesting look, interesting entrance, doing the yokai, you know, kind of twitchy. It's interesting. You know, it's kind of like with Master Watto, another young lion, you know, who's moved on to the main scene and came in with this character. They're pushing hard on the characterizations a little bit with these, with the young guys, right?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get it at all. And thankfully, Chris Charlton explained kind of like the reasoning behind it, that it's a homage to the masters of Japan and Chinese history. So yeah, I understand it now, but it's still it looks dumb.
It's interesting, but it is a callback not necessarily the outfit, but in his presentation, in his moveset, it does call back to Mongolian style. And I mean, he
Genghis Khan, Kublai Khan.
Exactly. And I mean, he used Mongolian chops, right? And boy,
did he. One or two Mongolian chops. He is the New Japan John Cena. He had literally five moves in the whole match.
You're already
and
giving
that
him...
That scream was so annoying every time he hit that Mongolian chop. If I never see another Mongolian chop, it's too soon.
It was a weird match, and Okada just was phoning it in. There was nothing here. There really was nothing to this match. The Okada gets the money clip in and the ref stops the match.
And yeah, pretty much.
And I mean, and then post-match, I mean, the thing here is that there's a post-match because Will Ospreay is there as well, and he's wearing a suit and he comes to the ring with champagne and he's sipping champagne as Great Okan wrestles. After the match, he gets into the ring, he being Ospreay, and essentially says that he gives us his motivations for turning on Okada to begin with. And he says that he's been using Okada to become popular so that he could then turn on him and start his own faction.
To be the best wrestler in the world. I mean, how does sitting under Okada's learning tree make him the best wrestler in the world? It doesn't. Will Ospreay cannot cut a promo at all. That was such a... The promo was worse than the match for him because it took so long to get to his point. The 3,000 pound suit, which looked like something he'd picked up off the rack, a watch, which he said was 10,000 pounds,
yes,
which he threw into the crowd. I mean, I know a Turkish salesman will sell you one of them for 20 quid, no questions asked. And that champagne, 2,000 pounds for a bottle of champagne, that was Dom Perignon, 20-year-old. That's 450 quid. So whoever sold him that for $2,000 has seen him absolutely coming. Yeah, it was a horrific promo following a horrific match.
It wasn't great. I mean, but it all leads into to him challenging Okada for Wrestle Kingdom. Okada accepts. A hell of a process to get to challenging for a match, because ultimately this is what this match was for.
Yeah,
it was to set up the Wrestle Kingdom match. I don't think we needed any of this. And it's kind of weird that, for the first, it wasn't like the first outing of Empire, because they did have tag team matches throughout the road to Power Struggle, right? Mm-hmm. Great Okan and Ospreay. But this was the first like singles match. And not that I was expecting necessarily Great Okan to defeat Kazuchika Okada, although it could have made sense for a bunch of reasons. like I said, hell of a path we took to get to just a challenge.
Yeah, and I think Carter said it best when he replied to Will. He said, "You said a lot of words there, but the only thing I really understood was Wrestle Kingdom, January the 4th, Will Ospreay, Kazuchi Okada." And that's, we got a match to set that up, essentially. One thing I did notice, and I thought that it was interesting for Okada to do, when he attempted the money clip a couple of times, he was stopped by the claw. But the one time that he locked it in and was able to win, he switched arms, so he blocked the claw hand from being used. So that was a nice little nuance I thought, and kind of like kept the Great Okada looking a little bit stronger than maybe people would have realized.
Want to say hello to Darkest Eclipse, who joined us in the chat. But on that point, Mongolian chops and the fucking claw, Mags. Right, I mean, there's as far as a finisher in 2020 professional wrestling, a claw has very little impact. Hell, even Lance Archer switched it up so that he started ramming the guy's head into the mat, and you know, and ultimately ends up pinning him instead of just waiting till he passes out because, oh, my temples are caving in. Please stop, ouchie, ouchies. Right now, Great Okan has hope. There's still room to grow. There's always that, but my God, they're gonna have to give him a more convincing moveset than this.
Yeah, it harkens back to wrestling of the 70s and 80s. Maybe they think that wrestling is cyclical enough that that's coming back. Who knows?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of vintage stuff, right? There's like, you know, I like to say that Otis is a throwback, you know, from WWE. He's a late 80s, early 90s WWE wrestler. He's a pastiche, you know, that's part of his appeal. I think there is room for that, but a claw, man. Anyway.
Yeah. The difference you said there was, though, that there was an appeal to Otis. There's no appeal to 54 Mongolian chops and 18 claws in a match.
All right, let's sink our teeth into something a little more interesting here. Kenta defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi to retain the IWGP United States Championship Challenge Right Certificate, which is in the most busted up briefcase in the business. I straight off the bat, I'm going to tell you, I think this is my match of the night. I liked it so much. Kenta immediately straight off the bat starts messing with Tanahashi's hair. You know that's a heel. That's a shit heel move right there. Nobody cares for that. Back and forth at first, including, you know, dueling air instruments, which I thought was nice. Tanahashi playing air guitar, Kenta playing air bass, which I thought was great. But then when he drop kicks, or yeah, when he kicks Kenta out of the ring and beats him up on the outside a bit, then Tanahashi's like, no. Then he does his guitar solo good and proper, and he fixes his hair. And I was like, oh, bravo, bravo. That was fantastic. The briefcase comes into play early as at least, you know, at first Kenta tries to use it. Tana withstands the mid kicks, but it's a neck breaker as well. They have lots of back and forth here. Kenta hits a spinning power slam. He DDTs Tana, who kicks out of a pin attempt, and Kenta bumps into the ref as he's being kicked out. The ref falls to the floor, so Kenta goes for the briefcase again. But there's this stalemate in the ring. Marty Asani comes in and pulls it off both of them. They start strong styling each other with some back fists, some combinations, straight punches, draping DDT by Kenta, followed by the hesitation basement dropkick in the corner. That coup de grace that he hit on Tanahashi. Oh, that look, that had to have hurt. And man, I tell you, when Kenta... Mags, when Kenta decides to turn it up, he becomes fantastic. His whole sequence of offense here was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, totally agree. I think he's one of the better wrestlers in New Japan. I love the little bit with the briefcase when Tanahashi had to confirm that it was the referee that made contact with Kenta, because woe betide anyone who besmirches the good name of Hiroshi Tanahashi. But yeah, it was a great match, and I think it was a great finish as well. I really, really enjoyed the match. And like you said, probably match of the night.
Yeah, I think so too. Let's talk about the finish. Tanahashi and Kenta have some back and forth going between their submission holds, between the game over and the cloverleaf. But Kenta finally gets the game over locked in and cranks it back good and proper, so that Tanahashi has no choice but to submit. Clean win by your boy Kenta here, despite the briefcase shenanigans, which were more early to mid-match. It didn't come into play at all for the actual finish. Clean win for Kenta over Tanahashi. So he retains the briefcase. We're going to start by talking about that. Then I want to talk about Tanahashi after. So clearly, we're heading into Wrestle Kingdom, Kenta versus Mox on that stage, John Moxley. My prediction here was I really thought Tanahashi was going to win the briefcase, because I felt like it was a big name for a big time match in the dome for Wrestle Kingdom, right? Tanahashi versus Moxley. I was like, okay, but shit. But I mean, I am in no way, shape, or form disappointed for Kenta versus Moxley. I was excited when Kenta won the briefcase during that tournament, and I'm still looking forward to it. So, to a degree, I'm happy. I'm still happy that that Kenta held on to the briefcase, but. Are they passing up a big marquee match with Moxley versus Tanahashi here?
Yeah, I mean, perhaps that was my initial thoughts anyway, that we were going to get Mox versus Tanahashi, and kind of like elevate that US title that's gone well. It's gone the way of the birds. We haven't seen it for so long. It literally means nothing. So that a Tanahashi win at Wrestle Kingdom would have instantly put that match really front and center again. But I do see the point of having Kenta challenge for that title, because he's been more involved in the New Japan US. So maybe it's a case of getting the title on someone who's going to be on the US shows. In Kenta, because it's very unlikely we're going to see a lot of Tanahashi on those US shows. So maybe that it's a push to make the US title the main title of the likes of New Japan Strong.
Now, in regards to Tanahashi himself, interesting story that they're telling with our boy Hiroshi since he lost the tag titles with Ibushi. Can't seem to find his footing. Finished with single digits scoring in the G1 this year, which is unusual for the man that we call the ace of New Japan. Comes into this big time match, loses again. You can't. Maybe at some point 2020 was a good year for Hiroshi Tanahashi, but it's been going downhill since he's returned to singles action. Are we seeing the beginning of a transition of Hiroshi Tanahashi's role in New Japan? Is he, you know, from being like a true top-notch active competitor to maybe transitioning more into, you know, as JPQ and I like to call them, the dads, the New Japan dads, right?
It certainly feels like that. I mean, winning this match, no clear path to a Wrestle Kingdom match. Is this a kind of like almost a passing of the torch event where where Tanahashi is going to maybe take over from Makabe as king of the New Japan dads.
Right.
Yeah. He's,
I mean, because you nailed it right there. There's no clear path for Tanahashi going into Wrestle Kingdom. You could probably argue that last year there wasn't a clear path either. Then Chris Jericho appeared, right? Mm-hmm. So there's still room for that. I'm not saying that Chris Jericho is suddenly going to reappear and challenge Tanahashi again. I think it'd be a retread and not necessarily interesting. I don't think it'd be interesting to do mm-hmm. to run that again this year. But I'm very curious. I'm very, very curious as to what they're doing here. And I mean, they just might go ahead and flip it right, flip everything right on its head. And 2021, Tanahashi has this banner year, right? I don't know.
Quite possibly. I mean, it could easily be kind of almost a repeat of the Naito redemption arc, where he has a build going downwards and then kind of gets that redemption. Hopefully we'll see that, because I think there's still a lot of legs left in Tanahashi.
I think so too. Yeah, we're definitely not at a Nakanishi level, you know, where it's like,
no,
bro, you have to retire. Like, this is, we're good, you know, or Jado, you know, it's like, no more of that. I'm confusing my dates all of a sudden. 2019, yes. 2020 is just screwing with everyone's mind. But in 2019, look what happened, right? Kenny Omega, the Elite, all planning on leaving. What do they do at Wrestle Kingdom? They decide you get Tanahashi versus Omega. What happens? They put the title on Tanahashi. He's the go-to, right? He's the guy, mm-hmm. like when the promotion's in trouble, when there's big shakeups, because of course they just a few months before that, they put the title on Omega, and then like eight months later, Omega's like, sayonara, everyone. I'm going to start my own company. You know, they turn around and they're like, Tana, we need you. And he's like, okay. And he turns it up and he delivers, mm-hmm. you know, so.
Yeah, I think he'll always have that air of legitimacy whenever they need him to, yeah. to. I mean, he could lose 50 matches in a row and then still look legitimate in winning the big title. So there is that. I think it'll just be an interesting story to see him kind of like fall further and further and down the card, and then ultimately we get the rise of the ace again.
Okay, now I'm going to say this out loud. Are we ready for this? Jay White defeated Kota Ibushi to become the first man to ever challenge and win for the IWGP and Intercontinental Challenge Rights Certificate, the briefcase. This is a thing that happened at this show.
16-1, and that one is Kota Ibushi.
Poor, look, okay, hang on, okay. The match, I enjoyed the match. Like, you know, I professed my love for Kenta versus Tanahashi, which I think was fantastic. I think they have great chemistry. They really work very well with each other. Ibushi and White too, don't get me wrong. I thought this was a really fun match. Don't get me wrong. And it starts off like a perfect Jay White match. Lots of stalling. Gets in control with some hair pulls and just some nastiness to begin. Stays in control for a spell, throwing Ibushi into the barricades. Ibushi fights back, tosses both White and Gato into the barricades. Hits a pescado, the standing moonsault. There's this spot where he goes for the second rope moonsault, but Jay White rolls out of the way, but not fast enough, so he sort of... Yeah, so Jay White's ass connects with Kota Ibushi's face in a bit of a scary way. And, you know, there's a lot of fan fiction that's probably going to be written around that situation as well. But it was a well-fought match. And I, you know, I really like how Jay White matches have evolved this year, especially during the G1. I think he's turned it up. He's becoming, as much as the complaints, and maybe get your thoughts on this, you know, a lot of complaints, especially during his first title run as IWGP Heavyweight Champion, were like, you know, he's so slow, the pace is so slow in Jay White matches. Now I feel like he still works a very heelish, deliberate style, but I feel like he's upping the work rate a little bit. I don't know how you feel about that.
I totally agree with you. I love his style. It's so different to so many wrestlers in New Japan. It's unique to Jay White, and I love that methodical breakdown. Mm-hmm. I love how he targets a certain body part, and he's just relentless to it. I mean, this one was obviously the ribs. Mm-hmm. I love how he works. I love his character work. He's probably the best heel in wrestling by a long, long way.
White avoids the Kamigoye, backslides Ibushi, and he's close enough to the ropes to use his feet on the second rope as leverage, or the third rope. I don't quite remember.
Third rope.
Third rope was a... Yeah. Marty Asani, shit ref extraordinaire moving forward, doesn't see it despite his positioning, and does the three count. Now, to me right now, Marty Asani and Rick Knox, they're in the same boat. And I, you know, let's call a spade a spade. Rick Knox, the tag teams love him in AEW because he doesn't call shit. He just lets them do whatever they want. He doesn't count anyone. He starts counting people out once they start heading over to tag in their partner or whatever. So that's a whole other story. But this is what happened, Mags. Jesus Christ.
Wow. Comparing to Rick Knox, that's law. That's law. But, yeah, what can you say, though? How can Kota Ibushi win two G1s in a row and not walk out of any of the matches as IWGP champion? It's unreal. And this was, for me, a massive, massive shock because it never happens. Nobody ever loses the briefcase. And Jay White is the first person to basically steal the briefcase. And it makes for a very interesting Wrestle Kingdom for me.
And I agree. I'm stunned, but I agree. I think I like the way that it's the most Jay White way to win the match. Right. Mm. And again, here we kind of like with the Kenta stuff, Bullet Club, still minimal involvement from Gedo. Nonetheless, like we've seen Gedo get involved much more heavily in Jay White matches. Let's not call this a clean win as opposed to what happened with Kenta. But, you know, it was more like Jay White using his own devices, his smarts, to get to the result, as opposed to having Gedo doing all sorts of shenanigans and having three other guys run in, you know. So that's something I can appreciate because I think it adds to the heel character of Jay White. Continues to prove my point that Jay White is the greatest heel in wrestling today. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard, and especially, look at the heat that this generates.
Yep, and it also adds to the story that Jay's been peddling about Kota not being able to beat Jay.
Yeah,
by hook or by crook, and that prophecy lives true because he just wasn't able to beat him.
And I saw people, and especially people that I like on Twitter. You know, referring to this and like, fuck New Japan. New Japan is terrible. I'm turning it off now. I can't stand that Ibushi lost. This is, you know, he deserves. But this is it, right? This is exactly what you're supposed to do with your big time heels, Mags. You're supposed to make people super pissed off at the result. So now next time you're going to tune in and you're going to want to see Jay White get the shit kicked out of him. You want to see him lose.
Yeah. And again, this is what New Japan do so well. We've seen Naito not be able to reach that pinnacle. We've seen it exactly the same with Kota Ibushi. It's a brilliantly told story. And Jay is the perfect foil for that. And then as we saw coming into the last match, there's still kind of wrinkles in this story to come, I think.
I think so. Well, yes, we will talk about those in just a few moments. But I mean, look, sometimes I wonder, Mags, if I should just switch my Twitter account to a full-on Jay White stan account. Because
I tried doing that for a PN News stan account, and it lasted all of a day. It's exhausting being a stan.
Especially a PN News one. Hats off to you, pal. When you get to a point where I'm really at a point where Jay White has grown on me so much, and I understand what he is and how he's booked and how well he's booked, I will still point to that match. And I can't remember last year when he defeated Naito, and I can't remember which one. And it was in the main event. It was probably at the end of a G1. I can't remember. I can't remember exactly which match. And I apologize. It's early / late for me. And people were filing out of the building because he had just defeated Naito. And I think it was at the block. There were block finals, I think, for the G1 last year. And people were filing out of the building as he was cutting his post-match promo. And he was waving and saying, well, thanks for coming, everyone, you know, kind of thing. It's like, bye-bye, you know. That's a heel. And you want to build a heel that you detest. Not someone who has a heel who does funny quips or who's a chicken shit and doesn't get the job done. A heel that people will dislike and will hate and will absolutely want the baby faces to rally and crush them. This is what you do. You take a universally loved wrestler like Kota Ibushi, a guy who has been in a literal struggle to earn any type of high level championship in New Japan, wins the G1 2 years in a row. You're like, okay, this is the year. This is where we're going hard for it. But no, just like that, poof, it disappears. It disappears because Jay White is literally a cerebral assassin. One guy might like to say he is, whereas one guy actually makes it happen.
Lives it.
Yeah.
It lives it. There's nothing in Jay White's work or his character or his words that is wasted.
Mm-hmm.
He's a machine. He tells you exactly what's going to happen months, sometimes years in advance, but you can guarantee it will happen because Jay White's just got that mentality that what he says is going to come true.
And commentary was saying, and this is what's wild, Mags, on top of all of this, commentary was saying that his debut as Switchblade when he came out and defeated Okada, right? After having the vignettes, you know, and the videos and the buildup to Switchblade Jay White, that was 3 years ago that he debuted. Three years since he's left the Young Lions program, Mags. And he's a master heel. He's in the top tier of New Japan. 3 years.
Not only a master heel though, but a master storyteller.
Yes.
He's got it down pat at such a young age. And this is a guy who's got probably 15, 20 more years in this business. to go. Yeah, it's amazing how quickly he just got it, how quickly he just got wrestling.
And this is not a knock, but especially with the style of wrestling that he does, especially with the way he wrestles, you know, his easily 20 years that he can, that he still has for us. It's fantastic stuff.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Main event, Tetsuya Naito retained the IWGP Heavyweight and Intercontinental Championships against Evil. Fourth match between them both. I don't know if I want to break it down all that much, you know, in details or at least, but I will break it down this way, Max. And we were talking about it before we got on air. About halfway through the match, I tweet out and I'm like, this is their best match so far. Mm-hmm. And I really do. And I'll stand by that because at that point I was like, man, this is pretty good. Is it blowing my mind? No, but their power struggle match stunk. I didn't like it. But here I was like, I don't even think it's because I had lowered my expectations. And then suddenly I'm like, oh, I'm surprised. They were actually having a solid match and the pace was good. I was entertained. I think there's really two stories to this match.
Definitely. The first 15, 20 minutes was absolutely fine. There was minimal interruptions from Dick Togo. I mean, the wrestling was as good as you're going to get with an Evil and Naito match. But yeah, it was very entertaining. And then the overbooking happened and then the interfering happened. And yeah, it just went to shit, didn't it?
Well, here's how it goes. Naito does a callback to their G1 match where he does two destinos, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, don't do the second destino. But he does it anyway because he has a point to prove and he has an ego, so on and so forth. So he does it, covers, and our boy Dick Togo drags Red Shoes out of the ring. Red Shoes out. And he gets the garrote out, chokes him out. Yujiro Takahashi, the Tokyo Beam, appears out of nowhere with this cane, hits the pimp juice on, and it grosses me out every time that I have to say the name of that finisher, the pimp juice.
Jesus. And it's only a DDT.
And it's all, yeah. It's
literally just a DDT.
So they take out Naito that way. Sanada in a wearing white like Dick Togo only wishes he could wear white.
And glittery shoes. No socks.
And red soles.
Yes.
Fantastic. Runs to the ring and literally carries Dick Togo and Yujiro away. Then there's low blows. There's low blow. I appreciate that. And commentary pointed it out that Naito decided to go all Rudo on Naito and hit a pop up low blow on him on Evil. Excuse me.
The volley low blow. Oh
yes,
that was. Yeah, my voice went two octaves up after that.
Jay White comes out. And we think he's going to switchblade Evil because he's looking at both guys and he's like, who am I going to fight? Who do I want to fight at Wrestle Kingdom? And we think he's going to blade run Evil, but he doesn't. He goes for Naito, but Ibushi arrives and Ibushi has murder face on. And so White hits the bricks before he can do anything dastardly to Naito, and Ibushi follows. There's another low blow after that, but Naito hits a brainbuster. Destino got the win. And as just before we get to the post-match shenanigans, give me your thoughts overall on this match, Magsy.
Yeah, it was just... Like I said, the first part I really enjoyed. It was never going to be a 5-star classic, but it was a fun match. Then the first kind of a segment of interruptions. Yeah, I like the fact that Sonata finally showed some passion. that he came out to defend his boy.
Yes.
I did enjoy that. But it was kind of negated when Jay White came out. I think they could have just cut that middle bit out and just have Jay White being involved instead and being chased down by Ibushi. I enjoyed that. The kind of still the fracture of Bullet Club, will he or won't he hit the switchblade on Evil? That was interesting. I think there's still legs in that. But then when Ibushi came running down and he was chasing Jay White like he owed him money. Oh, he was after kicking his ass. And we was hoping at last year's Wrestle Kingdom that we'd kind of get a bit of a dark Ibushi side, and maybe that can be the kind of genesis for it, that he's so angry at Jay. But Jay ran off like a scolded dog. We got the punt to the nuts of Evil, and then the finish. It was Naito had to come out of this as the winner. We don't want to see Evil as a double champion again. I mean, I liked him in the group of LRJ, but I don't think he's champion level for me, especially not the big title.
He's not upper tier.
No,
I talked to this. I talked about this with JPQ on a show recently, and you know, I think there were multiple good reasons to try out Evil as a main event guy. COVID, reduced rosters, just the simple idea of getting people excited about the product and talking about it because they were planning to return to live shows. So it's like, let's just pull off the ultimate swerve that'll piss people off. Have Naito lose the titles and to Evil, who's coming out of nowhere, winning the New Japan Cup kind of thing, you know? So, and that did get people talking. Sure. I think it was an experiment. I think we're done with it. You know, even Naito in his press conference comments leading up to this match was saying, yeah, I'm done with it too. You know, it's like, I don't know why we're having another match, and that's all right. Like I get why they did it. I think it's just time to dust yourself off and say, well, this didn't quite turn out exactly how we liked.
Yeah, but to be fair, it's carried them to Wrestle Kingdom, so I can't be too mad about it. At least we've still had decent product to watch.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. Now, after the match, after all these shenanigans, after all this stuff, Naito is in the ring and no one raised his hand. So he's asking like Liger to come raise his hand. Mm-hmm. He was probably asking, you know, Tsuji, who was on the outside, to come raise his hand. I don't know. At that point, I don't think he cared. But Jay White comes to the ring and obliges him and says, I'll raise your hand. And on top of that, basically tells him that I'm here to challenge you because I have the briefcase. And not on January 4th. At the Tokyo Dome at Wrestle Kingdom. I'm taking the night off. We're doing it on night two, January 5th. That's where I'm going to be challenging you. And, you know, Naito's being Naito, where he's mocking him. He's like, what are you talking about? And it's fantastic stuff. But then Ibushi comes back out. And Naito, and White, excuse me, is afraid. He's terrified of Ibushi at this point. And essentially he hit the brick. He just hit the bricks and scrammed again before Ibushi could get his hands on him. What do you think that might imply, Mag?
I think that might imply that Jay White would maybe pull in double duty at Wrestle Kingdom, that he may be having to redefend that briefcase. And that we may necessarily not get Jay White versus Naito on Night 2.
Oh, that...
Or we may get a triple threat.
That might be something. New Japan's not crazy about triple threats, right? I mean, no, we know that doesn't...
Definitely not.
That's definitely not something that we see all that often. I think off of the top of my head, Omega, Cody, Ibushi triple threat from 2018.
The G1 special.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was the only time I remember, really.
Yeah. The only reason I think that is because this is going to be a full year where these two titles have been locked together, and it's holding up essentially two divisions. There's got to be a way to split these belts back, so there's more championships for more people to go with. And the only way I can see is a triple threat where there's two falls, and one's for the first title and one's for the second title.
Sure. I can go for that. But yeah, I don't think we're quite done with this Jay White Ibushi stuff. I think Ibushi's going to try and win back his briefcase, and I think he will, because frankly, and again, this is coming from the mouth of a guy who absolutely adores Jay White, I think that your big money match for Wrestle Kingdom is Naito and Kota Ibushi. I think they're the two biggest stars that New Japan has right now. And it's really the match that has the most pure star power, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's the one that animates the fan base the most. So I kind of think you have to, I kind of think that you have to go back to that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the match that sounds like a Wrestle Kingdom headliner.
Yeah, it does. It feels big. It feels prestigious. Mm-hmm. Again, nothing against Jay White. God knows, nothing against Jay White. So there you have it. Power Struggle. Want to say hello to Throwback 27, who just jumped in as we are about to jump out of the internet. Mags, I can't thank you enough for joining me today to talk about Power Struggle. Let the people know before you go where they can find and follow all of your oeuvre on social media.
Okay, so you can follow me at Tony on Sports. I'm a fake wrestling fan. I think I'm better than wrestling fans now. I've gone on to legitimate sports. So yeah, come and follow me at Shooting the Sports Ish as well. No, in serious, you can follow me at Big Pause on a Put, where I pretend to be a retired podcaster and I just can't stop the Hulk Hogan treatment, where I've got to have one last run. Third time, okay, you can follow me at DAJ Kirby, where I have more podcasts than any man should ever have, but I'm addicted.
What can you do? What exactly? What can you do, man? Oh, Tony, we love you, Tony. We hope you have lots of success in sports betting. Max, I hope. Hope you have.
You broke me.
You set the table. Max, again, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And I think sooner than later, myself and Chris and Ashley are going to be joining you on one of your
Wrestling power couple.
Yeah, we're
the wrestling power couple.
We're something anyway, and we'll be joining you on one of your fine programmings out there. Maybe the MMA one, so that we can just sit there and be completely befuddled.
The soccer one.
Yeah, exactly. let's talk about the Premier League. Okay. Why do they all have company logos on their jerseys? That's weird.
Why is the score still 0-0?
They've been running around for 70 minutes and they haven't scored. How do you guys watch this shit? All right. Hey, I got to go to bed. Thank you so much, Max. But most of all, thank you, everyone, for joining us live here and for watching listening whenever. I really do appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed New Japan Pro Wrestling, their Power Struggle show. And even if you did it, that's fine as well. Whatever. Just I'm glad you guys came here. We'll see you next time.